It's Wednesday, November 7th, 2018, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are my Missouri School of Journalism colleagues, Mike McKean and Ernest Perry. We've got a special edition of our program for you this week. We call it The Day After, as we focus on yesterday's election. We're going to talk about the winners, the losers, and the way the media covered it. So I guess the first thing to just kind of throw out there, what happened? Here we are, and some races turning out kind of as they were expected. Results in Boone County, totally different than what we saw in much of the rest of the state.
Yeah, I guess before we get into any of the details, I would just say that journalists, like everybody, appreciate a simple narrative when one is available. But it doesn't seem to me like there was a simple narrative last night, and that maybe is a good thing. It wasn't just a blue wave, although there were aspects of a blue wave. It wasn't an endorsement of Trump's style or agenda, but there was some aspects of that. There's a lot of different stories and a lot of nuance, and I think it's good for journalists to try to focus on the nuance rather than to come up with a simplistic explanation of what happened.
Yeah, I don't think there's really, I think you're right, Mike. There's not really a one explanation to fit everything that happened. I think one of the things that, and we all have talked about this over the course of the election, this election season, is that we knew it was going to be a hard race for Claire McCaskill. And we knew that if she won, it was going to be close. And if she lost, that would, you know, would be within pretty much what the margin of error was. So I'm not surprised by the fact that, you know, most of her votes came from the usual blue places, Columbia, St. Louis, Kansas City. So I'm not surprised by that. But I would want to say that one of the things that did surprise me was Hawley stayed on message. He stayed on message pretty much throughout, even when he had the president, who tends not to stay on message, come through the state not once but twice in the last days. But Hawley stuck to what he was doing, and I think he's shown that if you stick to message as a Republican in this state, you can beat Claire McCaskill.
So talk about that part of it for a second. Donald Trump coming into town twice, here into Columbia and Boone County out at the airport last Thursday, to Cape Girardeau over the weekend with some other big name hitters from the right. How much do you think that helped Hawley in the end?
Well, you know, I mean, there was a lot of media analysis that tried to assert that Trump's coming into these states, including Missouri, might be a downer. And in fact, there were some polls leading right up to the election that purported to show that it was a very tight or even race. Of course, it didn't turn out that way. Why didn't it turn out that way? Were the polls simply wrong? Or did Trump have a real last-minute energizing effect on his base? I mean, every state he went to in the last week or so, it wasn't just Missouri. He went to Florida, he went to Montana, North Dakota, Indiana. And in every one of those states, the Republican either won or is ahead as the ballots are being finalized. So you'd have to say that his appearance had something to do with the success of those candidates.
Well, I would say that his appearance had something to do with the success of those candidates. But I would also say that I think the polls are wrong. I think the polls have been wrong. I think that when people go out and do the polling, that people are there's a certain segment of the polling population who will tell you one thing and do another. And we saw that in 2016. I think we saw it again in this election. I think you're going to see it going further whenever you have polarizing candidates like Donald Trump who say outlandish things, outrageous things, what some people would say is nationalistic, racist and bigoted things. People who support them, you'll be able to find the ones who are going to go out there and they're going to say, yeah, I support him. But there are going to be others who will not.
Silent supporters who don't want to identify themselves.
Absolutely.
And that is where
I think the polling comes up short.
Well, and it's interesting because most all of the news organizations this time did learn one lesson from 2016, which was not to rely on the exit polls to predict the outcomes or call elections. They all still used some form of exit polls. In fact, it was kind of interesting how the different news organizations did it this time. The primary consortium of the networks that stuck together from past years, they had their exit polls, but they were extremely careful about calling races. Fox News, on the other hand, used a new system that the Associated Press pulled out called VoteCast. And I don't, this is getting a little bit nerdy, I suppose, but it's kind of important. So what AP decided was that for all the reasons that Ernest was talking about, polling, especially same-day polling of people coming out of their polling places, is no longer reliable. Why? Because a lot of people vote early, so you don't get that factored into your exit polls. You also have a lot of folks, as you were saying, who no longer want to tell the truth about what they did when they came out of the polling places. There's a bias in that regard. So AP and Fox News decided to try something different. They took regular public opinion polls and tried to make them as scientifically accurate as they could from a few weeks back all the way up through yesterday, and then they matched that with an online survey they did of several thousand folks from around the country in different states, and from that, they came up with what they thought were more accurate reflections of the voters. But even then, the only way that they used them to call a race, per se, was to call earlier than anybody else did the fact that the Democrats had taken over the House. Not individual races, but only use that new system to call that.
See, but even Fox News in doing that last night, given how early the network did that, drew a lot of criticism because there were still polling places that were open on the West Coast, and it was seen as a partisan effort because of Fox News's right-leaning position to try to suppress voters on the West Coast from going out to vote on behalf of Democratic candidates because it was already in the bag, or trying to rally Republican voters to get out to the polls quickly.
I mean, I think that's one explanation, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'd also say from what I watched all of the networks last night, and it seemed to me that, for example, CNN, MSNBC, NBC were very, very cautious in anything they said officially. I mean, they ran up all kinds of things like, here's a race alert on CNN or whatever. Mm-hmm. There was nothing
key
more
race
than
alert.
Key race alert. Here's some numbers that don't mean anything, right? Mm-hmm. They waited because they were afraid to make that call officially, even though all the pundits they had on the air during those first couple of hours when we really didn't know anything, they were trying to suggest whether or not the Democrats were going to have a big gain or a modest gain or no gain.
And, so, and I think you saw a lot of, I mean, in the last week or so, you saw a lot of suggestions on which way things were going to go by the punditry. Across the board, whether you're talking about Fox or MSNBC, it was a lot about, well, we think it's going to be a blue wave, but we're not quite sure. Now that the president has come out and he's used all this inflammatory language, that may stir up the base, which means that there could be this red wall. I mean, there was a lot of that going on, and I think that also sort of led to the news side on the other hand being much more cautious in calling races and in some of the reporting that they were doing yesterday in particular.
I will say what I did like about the way that both the consortium that used the old style exit polls and the new AP Fox group that used the new style, what they did this time was simply try to look at the data to explain what was going on, the why of what was happening. They found that, in fact, Trump was a major factor in why people voted. Very few of those races were localized. They were nationalized mm-hmm. because of Trump, both for and against the Republicans, right? They found out that, in fact, it's true that women and people in the suburbs generally switched to the left mm-hmm. even more so than usual. That's useful information. That's an interesting story to tell, but it doesn't just try to make a simple prediction that can get us in trouble. So I appreciated that.
You know, one of the other things, too, is you bring up, Mike, with these changes and these two different ways of having those early numbers. Here in Missouri, because of voting problems in certain parts of the states, there were polls that were open last night well past 9 o'clock. And if I spent most of the evening going back and forth between CNN, NBC, and then sitting with the Secretary of State's office, the Boone County Clerk's office, and the New York Times, refreshing those three tabs on my computer. And if you kept watching, the numbers on CNN and the numbers from the New York Times, they were diametrically opposed. Claire McCaskill was kicking butt on the New York Times' website compared to what CNN had. And in a lot of ways, that also kind of points back to the fact that the Secretary of State's office wasn't reporting any numbers anywhere until every single voter in the state had had an opportunity to cast a ballot.
I thought that was an interesting decision. I'm not necessarily criticizing it, although it was like 9:30 Central Time before we got any results at all from the Secretary of State. The argument was that we should let people vote. And that's probably the single biggest common thread across the country. The turnout was phenomenal for a midterm election.
Right.
And whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or somewhere in between, that's good news. I mean, the fact that a lot of people came out to participate makes those elections more legitimate than they otherwise would have been.
You know, that question of the blue wave or the red wall, what's definitely undebatable is that the millennials and the Gen Z voters, they turned out.
Yes, so did Trump's people.
And so, yes, absolutely. So did Trump supporters. But you also had, longtime Democrats who also turned out as well. I mean, one of the things that I think this poses for the news media as well as for government officials is that how do we deal with this going forward? Because there were some serious problems across the country in terms of election. You had machines not working. You had poll workers not understanding what they were supposed to do.
Running out of paper ballots.
Power strips in Georgia in minority polling places.
Absolutely.
Right?
And for the journalists, I think the story is what's going on with the infrastructure in our elections. We've spent so much time talking about how the Russian hackers and others have infiltrated and corrupted our electoral process. That's still a story, but now we need to talk about how is the infrastructure inhibiting the ability to be able to conduct an election.
And this isn't even about a failure of technology in a lot of cases. This is not running off enough paper ballots.
Absolutely. This is human error. Yeah. A lot of this is human error. And I think that's a huge story that really needs to be covered by the media.
Well, so while we're talking about things we should be covering, let me just suggest something that all of the television news outlets could do on the next election night. Instead of spending the first 2 to 3 hours with constant speculation, meaningless updates to slight percentages of voters, you know, whatever. Why don't we just have some, remember the old days when we went out and did actual reporting and reporters had packages and they interviewed people?
Almost like covering the Olympics. You still have these human interest stories that are interspersed between the actual events when there isn't a whole lot of action to talk about.
I mean, I get, in fact, my wife was even talking about how it's kind of interesting to how they do the play-by-play now, but after a while, the talking heads in the horse race, it just gets to be really boring. Everybody's doing the same thing. They all have their magic walls. And I mean, you know, I still, you know, have my favorites in terms of who uses those things, but it's all the same. Let's zoom in and let's see how many voters were in this district. Okay, after a while, let's tell some other stories that might help the electorate to understand what's happening and what's going to happen next.
I think we all know why that's part of the reason why that's not happening.
It's
cheaper to have the wall. It's cheaper to have the pundits than
and it's
is.
A shiny thing.
It's a shiny thing. It has proven to hold the audience's attention and not necessarily those stories, because you're going to really have to go out there and find people and build relationships with so that people are willing to tell you what went into their mindset of how they casted that ballot. I mean, and also you have to wade through all of the communications people and the PR reps and the advisors in order to really get to the candidate on election day to say, okay, really tell me how you feel about what's going
on. Or to get to the depth of the language. One of the things that I wanted to make sure we had an opportunity to talk about were some of those ballot initiatives and amendments and propositions that were on the ballot, both here in Missouri, a couple of big ones that did end up getting approved to raise the minimum wage, becoming the 32nd state to approve medical marijuana, the Rhodes bill actually failing. There were a couple of really important propositions that were on the ballot, that there could be some really good storytelling around some of those in reporting and what the impact of each of those could be. And sometimes the wording in those can be so dense that people may not even recognize what they're voting for.
The wording on the medical marijuana was weird to me. And then the wording on the roads was weird to me, because the first thing that popped up was law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Not that the tax was going to actually help
Improve roads conditions.
Roads conditions, yeah. I mean, it was really, it had to be confusing for people who are voting on those initiatives. Now, in getting back to the roads one, I mean, what is it going to take? Is it going to take a bridge collapse like what happened in Minneapolis
about 10, 15 years ago?
We decide that we're going to deal with the infrastructure in this state. I mean, right now, next to Alaska is the only state other than Missouri to have the lowest gas, the lowest fuel tax.
I mean, if you look at, Missouri is a classic, low tax state, and the only taxes we approve are like sin taxes, right, on other people, quote unquote, to pay, right, or the conservation tax. I mean, it's the one thing in Missouri where people are willing to continue to pay a sales tax for improvements. We won't pay for infrastructure. It's a story that probably needs further delving into. I like the other thing you mentioned too, Amy, about the gas tax and the fact that it was two sort of, they're related issues, but some of the money goes for roads and bridges. Some of it goes for the highway patrol.
Right.
Right. But it reminds me of one of these issues that sometimes the courts deal with, or sometimes when it's legislation that governors end up vetoing legislation because it contains more than one unrelated topic. And yet in the state of Florida, where I was monitoring some of the ballot measures last night, they actually have a commission that deliberately puts together unrelated things. So here's one that passed in Florida yesterday, and that was to have no offshore drilling. So that was the first item on the ballot measure, but also in the same language, a ban on vaping in indoor workplaces. So you had to, if you favored vaping but opposed offshore drilling or vice versa, you had to vote for both of them at the same time.
It's the voter's equivalent of putting pork into some kind of a bill somewhere. Florida, though, had another very interesting proposition that passed.
It did.
If you're somebody who finds yourself on the left, perhaps something to be excited about, the idea of giving felons the right to vote again, kind of controversial, but that idea of maybe you've paid your debt to society, have some of those rights come back to you afterwards.
Right. And I can tell you this, the passage of this one is going to have an impact on the next election in Florida, because those people are going to vote in huge numbers, and they're going to remember who was pushing that. I mean, I think if you had, if this had been done back in 2016, I think that the Gillum race would have went much different than what it did this time.
There was another sort of law and order kind of item on the Washington ballot that I found interesting, too. Not because it will have any impact on Washington as a reliably liberal democratic state, but if other states pick up on it, it could be interesting. They approved, and I think they're the first state to do this, new training procedures and new standards for police officers to use deadly force. Hmm. And that could be really worth watching to see what happens there. There were also all kinds of oddball things. As you know, on these petitions that go on the ballot, some of them are initiated by citizens, some by lobbyists, some by the legislature. So you get all kinds of weird things. Michigan voted to legalize recreational marijuana. How many states have done that now? That was a big thing.
Yep.
Idaho and Nebraska voted to expand Medicare coverage into Obamacare. And those are two Republican states.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
That's an interesting thing to watch. But then you had in California, which usually has like every kind of ballot measure you can imagine, they took a tax on millionaires, how many places have those, to support housing for the homeless. That was approved. They banned the sale of meat from animals that are confined in small, inhuman spaces. Now, go over to North Carolina. They had an animal rights issue on the ballot, too, but instead they approved an amendment protecting the right to hunt and to fish. So there's all kinds of weird things that are out there. Nevada exempted feminine hygiene products from the state sales tax.
You know, that's one, though, that I think you're going to find over the course of the next 5 or 10 years that you're going to start to see more and more that's frankly a tax on sex and gender.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
But all these things, you just see the one line in the headlines of the national news story, and you really don't know the context.
Right.
That's why I'm saying we need to have more
reporting
on these.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Any other ones that are on
your
list that we didn't get to yet?
Massachusetts had one that was interesting in my household because there's a lot of medical professionals in my family. And in Massachusetts, there was a proposal to limit the number of patients that a nurse could be assigned to take care of at any one time.
Hmm.
And it failed. And then there was another one that I just don't get in Colorado, talking about crime and punishment. Apparently, there has been in their state constitution until last night a provision that says that while slavery is banned in the state of Colorado, you can use slavery or indentured servitude as a punishment for certain crimes. I don't know why that has been in their constitution all these years, but it was removed by vote of the people last night. So a lot of interesting items.
Ernest
on the
and I are looking at each other going, it's 2018.
I have no idea. Yeah, yeah. These are things we all need to research too. There's some stories to be told there.
Yeah.
So a couple of other themes that kind of stuck. We're all so tired and election hungover that stuck out to me over the past couple of weeks. And it seemed never ending. I'm not one to watch a lot of live TV to begin with because I tend to have this habit of just falling asleep during the commercials. But especially here in Missouri, a commercial break in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, it was nothing but election advertising.
Absolutely.
And it was all negative.
Yeah.
It was all negative, more so than what it seems we've ever seen or experienced.
And even when
before.
They tried to make it, you know, a little bit more palpable in the last couple of days, you had Hawley giving his last minute say
the,
to
the folksy,
it's
all wrong,
and Claire
it's all
doing
lies.
Theirs. Yeah, it's all lies. Even and then at the end, he goes, but Chuck Schumer, you know, and it turns negative. I mean, it was pretty bad toward the end, and I can't imagine that a lot of people didn't just tune it out.
Well, and the worst ad, of course, I think most people would agree, was the Trump campaign ad in support of Republicans.
Yes.
Basically, their Willie Horton ad.
Yeah.
You know, this convicted illegal immigrant who killed two police
officers. MS-13, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, and how that was then showcased right up alongside the caravan and, you know, the danger of all these immigrants coming to our country.
Well, and that
but
ad
there was
specifically,
networks, pulled it.
Networks that ran it,
well, CNN
and Fox
refused
pulled it,
News
and
pulled
then.
It. Yeah, and CNN refused to run it from the beginning. Yeah. You know, and so that was interesting.
And Facebook pulled it, but after saying that there had been millions of people who had seen it on that platform as well.
Right. Yeah. Right.
By the way, speaking of Fox News, I mean, was it interesting to all of you that, you know, the sort of the pushback from people inside Fox News when
Let's get back a little bit. We had talked so much about the Trump factor, especially here in Missouri, going back about 20 minutes ago. Those big names that I was saying that he had brought out to Cape Girardeau, Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. And Sean Hannity had made this big promise that he wasn't going to appear on stage and make a big deal out of his presence there, and then backed off of that promise.
Well,
was
he did
right
more than
there.
Backed off. I mean, he showed up big time.
He showed up big time. He started calling the media names.
Yeah.
But his colleagues at Fox News aren't so happy about this.
No, no.
They're mad.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm confident that is true, but it's also kind of sad to me that no one within Fox News, especially the heavyweights who could afford to have their name out there, would put their name out there. I mean, Chris Wallace, you know, or Bret Baier could have stepped up and said, you know, this is wrong, and attached their name to it. Instead, they all anonymously complained about the fact that this looked bad onto their news organization.
Right, right. I mean, you know, if you're going to call it out, then just call it out. I mean, and you had some people at Fox that did that, but then you had others who just sort of said, well, it's just not very professional, this sort of thing. I mean, but come on. You know, this is Fox, and this is what they do, and I don't think that that's going to change much.
It was interesting that Hannity didn't show up on the air at all last night, and you'd expect he might have. I mean, Tucker Carlson was on the air, Laura Ingraham was on the air. For whatever reason, Hannity wasn't there. And was that some kind of slap on the wrist? That's probably all he's going to get. Yeah. But it was really interesting. Yeah. You know who else wasn't on the air for the first time covering elections in a long time? Megyn Kelly.
Yes.
Yes. NBC having to figure out a way around that. In fact, I saw something that on I don't remember which cable provider it was, but on the digital guide still had all of the names of the NBC employees, that it was going to be Chuck Todd and Savannah Guthrie and Lester Holt and Megyn Kelly. And it was almost as though with everything that happened with her last week and with her erasure from NBC, I think that's kind of the best word I can use right now until they formally divorce themselves of one another. They hadn't gotten that off the TV screens yet.
It's very interesting, and what's also interesting is that they're still negotiating.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just looking on the outside looking in, you kind of want to think that they don't want to pay her what she's due, in terms of the contract. So now they're trying to figure out some sort of exit strategy that doesn't give her this big buyout. Because what has it been, almost 2 weeks now? Since broke.
That remark.
Yeah.
Speaking of NBC and issues going on there, Saturday night on Saturday Night Live, Pete Davidson made a remark during a sketch or a segment of the Weekend Update part of the program, in which he was making fun of candidates entirely based on their looks and brought up their and appearances and brought up Dan Crenshaw from Texas. Don't have the clip available to play for you, but basically was making fun of this guy because he wears an eye patch following an injury that he sustained while serving in the military. He's not apologizing, though. A lot of people are saying that went too far and he needs to.
I mean, he's already, you know, trying to apologize for the way he handled the breakup with his fiance. And he thought maybe if he made fun of his own appearance, it's on the same segment, that was somehow going to, you know, alleviate any of the criticism, but it didn't. It was a cheap shot at some folks based entirely on their looks.
I keep wondering, how long is it going to take for you know, whether you're a comedian or whoever, how long is it going to take for you to understand that, you know, making fun of people's appearances is not going to play very well, not in today's age?
There was an interesting use of language last night that I'm wondering how people are going to end up covering too. So Beto O'Rourke, everybody's, you know, darling, who
in
for
Texas,
a long time,
the challenger to Ted Cruz.
It looked like, you know, the networks, oh, maybe he's going to beat Ted Cruz, when he finally conceded defeat on MSNBC, the only network that carried his concession speech live. He used the F-bomb in thanking his supporters. And was that merely a slip of the tongue, a spur of the moment thing? Was it planned? I don't know, but it's getting an awful lot of social media attention today.
Wow. Well, I mean, I know one of the things that we probably won't have time to touch on this, but the resignations have started. Jeff Sessions announced, as we're taping this, that he is stepping down as Attorney General. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens over the course of the next couple of months with the Trump administration.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things that I think the three of us agree to, that as we move forward here, because we're going to be looking at what we're reporting on and how things are developing. So what happens now that Sessions is being resigned, the New York Times saying he was forced out in the headline that they have up there, what happens with the Mueller investigation, who else may be leaving or coming into the cabinet, what some of these other nominations are. I mean, I don't know if I'm putting any credence in it, but some are even saying maybe Hannity came to this thing the other day because he's looking for a cabinet appointment. Who knows? Well, that music means we're pretty much out of time for this week. So thank you for spending the last half hour with us. We appreciate your time. We invite you to read more about all of the topics we talked about today on our links blog. That's under the programs tab at kbia.org. We invite you to like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at @newsonkbia. These are all great ways to watch and listen to our program again, to leave us comments or questions, see previews of what we'll be talking about next week, and more. Normally, this is where I thank Travis McMillan for directing today's show, but we had some technical problems, so he'll be back with us next week when we bring our video back. I'd like to thank Aaron Hay for handling the audio for us in KBIA studios today. Tim Pilcher composed our original theme music. Jared Ridgway is our social media producer. And I'm Amy Simons. We'll be with you again next week for another edition of Views of the News.